a Wednesday drive. Welcome in. It is WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad, where we are live inside the Media Center at the 107th PGA Championship, Quail Hollow, Golf Club specifically, Charlotte, North Carolina. Our appearance brought to you by our friends at Reese Builders, Glorified Body Well Spa, and Thai Destiny. Greatly appreciate those folks for helping us get to golf's second major of the year. And with golf in mind and the championship starting tomorrow, let's make a pick. Now that Rory McIlroy has his Masters win, it's Scottie Scheffler's turn to win this week. We talked about it at the onset of this week. Scottie and Rory against the field. Rory McIlroy met with the media earlier today, and he was talking about last month's Masters win as if the job was done. The job is finished. The career slam is done. We have the weight off our back. It didn't sound like it was a guy all that ready to go to battle this week who is hungry to win for the fifth time in 14 starts on this golf course. We could be wrong. He won the Wells Fargo Championship here just a year ago. But believe it or not, the Masters is the only major that Scottie Scheffler has won. Did you know that? Scottie Scheffler has only won one major championship. Well, he's won two majors, but it was two green jackets in Augusta. And that's really surprising to hear, considering how well he's played in all the majors. His last 15 major starts, he had a runner-up finish at the PGA in 2023, a runner-up in the 2022 U.S. Open as well. But you be the judge. WD, we heard from Scottie Scheffler yesterday. Here, he sounded, do you think he sounds like a guy who's all that worried about having not won at the PGA? It doesn't sound like this when this exchange happened.
Winning the PGA as opposed to the Masters, or, you know, you've had a little more struggles here than at Augusta.
Like, what? Why haven't I won here? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a long way of saying that. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like you said, just a couple shots here and there. You know, I was close at Oak Hill the year Brooks won. That was as close as I remember being to winning this tournament. But I mean, it's a good golf tournament. You know, we're always playing a great golf course, and same thing this week, another really good golf course, and should be a good test of golf. And I'm looking forward to getting the week going.
Scottie's one of three guys who are on the PGA Tour right now, playing supremely well right now. Rory's obviously won. He had wins, plural, prior to winning in Augusta last month. Scottie, he won his last event, the Byron Nelson, not this past weekend, but the weekend before. And he has five other top 10 finishes. Justin Thomas is the third of the three, by the way. The last time the PGA Championship was here at Quail Hollow in 2017, he was the one holding up the trophy. He's won three of his last four stops on tour. If you go to the LIV guys, Bryson DeChambeau playing really well too. This does feel like a tournament that's going to be won by one of those big guns that are out there. And one extra variable is that Scottie, he should be playing with a chip this week. He felt that the Masters was very obtainable for him, and it was a missed opportunity. If you watch his middle rounds, rounds two and three, he was subpar for his standard, and he still finished top five, had the opportunity to win at Augusta, did not. The last tournament he played within our state's borders in North Carolina was his worst major start in 3 years. That was Pinehurst last year, where he finished outside the top 40. And don't forget, the last time he played the PGA Championship in Louisville last year, he was arrested before his second round. A lot of people making jokes here today on practice day as Scottie Scheffler finished up his round, Will, and he was wearing an orange polo. Wearing orange at the PGA Championship a year after he was arrested at the PGA Championship. Now, to be fair, he is a Texas Longhorn Hook'em graduate, and it did look burnt orange, but something that a lot of folks have been pointing out. Scotty is the pick. He is the winner of the 107th PGA Championship. He will win the 2025 PGA, which will get him halfway to achieving what Rory did last month, winning a career slam. On X, at Josh Graham Show, and at WSJS Radio, that is where we're streaming video in addition to YouTube and Twitch. Will Dalton, he is the executive producer of this show back in our studios. What was that? Is that the NFL on Fox music?
So that's going to be the sound that you hear throughout the day today when there's a schedule drop nugget had.
So anytime there's NFL schedule news, Carolina Panthers, were you just messing with us there, or did you actually have Carolina Panthers scheduling news to share with us?
You should know, the Panthers, Travis Hunter, is going to make his NFL debut against none other than the Carolina Panthers week one.
You underestimate the audience, Will. That is 5-6 hours ago news.
I'm aware.
You are not interrupting a show at 3:06 in the afternoon with something that people could have read at 10 o'clock this morning.
Okay, you want me to do one
please,
even better than that? I also
you
just
better,
didn't know where you wanted to go first.
I will punch you. Give me the latest thing
all
that
right.
You've seen if you're going to do this.
Our guy T-Bone of WFNZ.
Well, if you're going to do it, you better.
So T-Bone of WFNZ, he's been a busy man today, breaking a lot of these.
Travis Hancock, you could just call him Bone.
Bone.
He went to high school with Chris Paul, West Forsyth, shout out.
The latest we have, the Panthers going to face an old friend. On November 24th in prime time, the 49ers, Christian McCaffrey.
Ah.
How about it? So at least one primetime game we know for the Panthers this year.
So there's a lot you can mock about the NFL schedule release. We already know who the opponents are going to be, yet it's a chore where stuff's leaking out today and the full release isn't until later tonight. But from a competitive standpoint, the NFL schedule release actually does matter. From a reputation standpoint, it matters. See, the first point of interest is what you talked about there. It's primetime games. It is. Carolina didn't receive one last year. And that was the league's way of saying, we don't care about you. You don't really move the needle. You're not all that interesting. You're not getting any primetime games. And national perception is generally shaped by how you perform in standalone primetime games. So we'll see if they get any more than that. But even if it's just that Monday night game in San Francisco, well, that's a start. And that's where national perception starts to shape for Dave Canales and shape for Bryce Young and for Carolina. From a competitive standpoint, the thing teams care the most about is preparation time. Disparity in preparation time. This is why players hate playing Thursday night games. Very short week. That's not the most fun thing to deal with. But it goes even further than that. You'd like to draw teams coming off a bye. Or you would not like to draw teams coming off a bye. When you get your bye week, you don't want to face a team that's also on a bye the following week. You don't want to face a team also coming off a bye because then your preparation advantage is neutralized. And there are many more examples such as that. Teams that get the extra 3 days between Thursday and playing you, going on the road after you play a Monday night. It'll be interesting to see in San Francisco who Carolina's next game is against and when that happens. And then the rest of it is circumstantial. The rest of it is you ideally would like to play the Jaguars on the road in December rather than going to Jacksonville for an afternoon game in early September, so that's not great. You might want Dallas early in the season when your offensive line is healthy and you're playing that front. You might want to get teams like New Orleans or Tampa early because Tampa has a new staff on the offensive side and New Orleans has a completely new staff altogether. Same thing for Seattle with the new play caller. There are many examples of this. You might not want to go to New England or the Jets late in the year. That might be one early in the season. So it matters, the schedule release. It does. Will Dalton, we got a massive show today. We do. SportsCenter anchor Michael Eve's going to be here later this hour. We've got, also from ESPN, Mark Schlabaugh is going to drop by our set. College football and golf writer, senior writer for ESPN. We have, from the AP, our friend Steve Reed is going to pay a visit. Orioles baseball is going on during today's show, where just now, ground ball to first. First baseman touches first base, and there's the final out. The Orioles fall to Minnesota 6-3. Header. Over yet, Will. This is just the pain that we start with. Minnesota having beaten us four straight times now. We get one more between those two that starts in about an hour, 45 minutes from now. However, and wherever you're listening or watching, greatly appreciate that. Our first guest today, though, here at the Golf Course, Quail Hollow in Charlotte, side of the PGA Championship, it is Carolina Panthers announcer Jim Zocchi. Will WD sound this sounder during our conversation? Will there be new things for us to learn? We'll find out and react. Just how much does the NFL schedule release matter? Jim Zocchi will tell us next.
Instead of just talking, why don't you listen? That's why you have people call in. Listen for a minute.
Oh, welcome back to the Happy Circle.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
Jim Zocchi, our first guest, Panthers Radio Network here in Quail Hollow, his turf in Charlotte. We were just talking about the Panthers schedule, and it's easy to mock the NFL schedule release because we already knew the opponents. We need to put this thing in prime time. But there is real significance when you talk about rest disparity, how many short weeks, who do you get coming off byes.
How many games in Europe will the Vikings play?
Two in a row is the answer. And one thing we learned today, hey, it's better to play in Jacksonville in December like the Panthers did a few years ago than, say, play in early September, week one like Carolina is. So what do you make of the schedule? What are the things that you look at first when you see the slate drop in its entirety tonight?
For my third year in a row, first thing I look at is, how does this affect my ECU schedule? So that's honestly the first thing. I used to look at my wife's birthdays around Thanksgiving and things like that. Those still matter, honey. But the travel is the back and forth is the interesting aspect of that. So, you know, primetime, people were laughing in Greenville about how many, like, there's no Saturday games in October, right? So they're all Thursday games and bye weeks and things like that. So that actually helps in theory because the Panthers don't get a bunch of primetime games. So I think, you know, that's the first thing I'll look at when I get that schedule later on tonight is, what are the Sundays? What are the weeknights? What are the bye weeks? How does it match up with the ECU schedule? So that'll be the first thing I look at. As far as the football aspect of it goes, I think we have something like the fourth easiest schedule based on last year's record. So hopefully a team that will be hopefully contending for a playoff spot, if not making the playoffs this year.
See, that's the part that I keep talking with Will about, that I worry when expectations are set, where, you know, it winning five games felt really good, mm-hmm. considering how it ended and really, frankly, what the previous six seasons were. But it's a lot more difficult, in my view, to go from five wins to eight than going from 2-5. And I feel there's a disconnect with the way fans are looking at expectations versus perhaps people in that building. And the thing that set that off was, when they released Jadeveon Clowney last week, and you have Dave Canales saying, well, we want to work in younger guys, That does not sound like the mentality of a coach that feels he has a team that's ready to be a playoff team right now. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at each veteran player individually, and I think from a money ball aspect, 5.5 quarterback sacks for the money they were paying him, I'm thinking, well, maybe these rookies, you know, one of them, and then in combination with some other players, can they get, you know, a full season out of DJ Wanham, where he came in middle of last year? So could be a little bit of, if Jadavian had 11 sacks last year, maybe there wouldn't be so much looking at the young players like, maybe Jadavian doesn't have what he was at one point in his career to be able to do for 17 weeks out there. And he'll land somewhere and he'll help a team out there. So it is kind of a, it's an interesting combination of what they do here as far as love Adam Thielen. They want him. It seems like every year he'll play till he's 40, the way we're going right now. And then dealing with the fact that you've got a bunch of young receivers with him. So I think you always want at least that one veteran in there, but you do have DJ Wanham. You got some other guys that have been around the league for a while at the edge positions.
It seems to me, going back to the schedule, the league's way of telling you you matter is primetime games. And it seems that they're, nationally speaking, people don't know who Dave Canales is. They don't know really what's happening with Bryce, except from what he did against the Chiefs and the Eagles and a few when you play some of the top teams, and he played well in those games. But really, public perception is set when you have standalone games, when you play in prime time. How much do you think that is going to be a central focus?
I think it's always one of the first things I think fans look at and people talk about it on shows. So to me, I think you're right. It's usually an indicator of mostly what you did last season, unless you've had a really interesting off season. And so I think when you add interesting pieces, that changes how people feel about what you're going to be doing this year, even if you weren't as good the year before. I think for the Panthers, they had a really solid free agency class, a really solid draft class, but nothing that was like, you know, national attention, to your point. So I think from that standpoint, I'm not expecting big things as far as the national primetime schedule out of what Carolina's going to get.
Jim Zocchi's with us here. We're at Quail Hollow. PGA Championship starts tomorrow in the Queen City. We'll get to your ECU Pirates, our ECU Pirates, in just a bit. One more on the schedule, though. You let me know if this is a ridiculous premise. WD mocked me for it.
Okay.
But if I've learned anything about the NFL, this is telling me where we're headed. The NFL draft is, it drew 600,000 people in Wisconsin. People showed up, 600,000 people over 3 days, to watch someone step to a microphone and read names mostly that they don't know and hold up jerseys with now people who are millionaires. That's the entertainment vehicle. That's the NFL for you. They put the combine in primetime television workouts. Are we getting to a place? Is it a stupid, is it a ridiculous idea that soon the schedule release is going to be protected and like embargoed the way that like the NCAA tournament bracket is, and they're going to make this an event that is a spectator event? Hey, come to Charlotte Uptown, where 32 stars, like one from each team, is going to come out and read the team's schedule team by team.
I could see that. No, I don't think he should not be mocked for that. I'll say that.
How far does the NFL, I guess the ultimate question is,
are they breaking it into a 3-night television event?
How far does the NFL have to go? They're making the old men, the 70 and 80 year olds, give their Hall of Fame speeches at 10 o'clock at night, not in the middle of the day anymore.
Right.
They're going to put that in prime time. How far do they have to go before we say this is kind of ridiculous?
Oh, we're there. No, we're there. No, we've been there, Josh. It's not a future question. At what point was that decision made where it became stupid and ridiculous at everything? I mean, I used to love getting up on Saturday and waiting for Mel Kiper at noon to do the first round of the NFL draft.
It's have the opponents.
Right.
We're waiting until 8:30 to do the whole thing.
We just want to know, is it going to be at 1 or 4? I mean, there's not a lot more. There's not a lot more to it than that. But it's a lot. And the combine, like to me, the combine is the most ridiculous thing because it is so much television event coverage, and there are so many key players that don't even compete in that, so to speak.
And the thing that matters most is behind the scenes,
right?
It's not.
And the pro day is bigger, and then you know the Wonderlic. So it's just like, yeah, it's too much already as it is, but. Yeah, more is always more. And by the way, these schedule leaks, these are not leaky leaks. I mean, the league wouldn't leak them unless they wanted all of the attention and the buildup with some of these things.
So. Oh, yeah. Real journalism happening.
Jim Zocchi. Yeah, so not muckraking.
With us here. Okay, so East Carolina opens up with NC State. I took issue in the college basketball season when North Carolina wanted NC State. with Jalen Washington doing the wolf fingers and then going down with them. Mm-hmm. And some said, oh, he's championed the Wolves down. No, no, no. That was East Carolina in the bowl game. So I'm just wondering, over under 0.5 Wolves down for ECU football players at Carter Finley Stadium week one this season.
Over, right? Yeah, it's over. I think, you know,
I asked Blake Harrell at the Canes game on Saturday if he was tempted in the home of the Wolfpack for basketball before doing the siren to hit him with a Wolves down. He said no. That his wife
not in Raleigh.
That his wife said, we want to actually stay at the game.
Yes, it's just in Raleigh, not there.
But he's going to be in Raleigh week one.
He's going to be, but that's the time to do it, not you know, months and months in advance there. But no, I think, you know, and as you would expect, NC State doesn't view it as the same level. It's a rivalry regardless. It is a rivalry, whether they have it as a 10 on the meter or not. But I think for ECU, it does mean more, obviously. It's a power four thing. It's just, it is what it is. I get that. Chip on the shoulder of, you know, the smaller opponent versus the bigger conference and that kind of the money, all that kind of stuff. But I think ECU threw that gauntlet down at that bowl game. And so the anger and just the pushing and the shoving and the barking, it's a great way to open the season. I was a little surprised, honestly, NC State took that game because they get to choose if they're going to be in that bowl game or not. So knowing that that was going to be the opener, I was kind of surprised they took that as the game heading into what will be an opener here. Could not have worked out any better for ECU, and the only way to solidify it even more is to do it again and to see if they can go into Raleigh and do it in a regular season game, and that would that would give you bragging rights for generations to come.
Since we're here at Quail Hollow, Jim Zocchi with us here, let's close with golf. What do you view as being the biggest story this week, whether it's local, national, golf-related, city-related? What are you most interested in?
To be someone that lives here and works here and does shows here every day, having it here is such a big deal. It was here, obviously, in 2017. To me, whether Rory wins it or Scheffler wins it or Xander Schauffele wins it will be less of a storyline than the fact that this is going to be just a fun week of golf. We're going to have great weather after today. I think it's clearing out right now for the rest of the week. So, you know, as we know, this is a regular season event usually that plays like a major. Every few years it is a major. So this is exciting to have this happening here. And that's the story to me, is that Charlotte is big enough and has done with Johnny Harris and everybody involved with this, such a great job with this through the years to make it an ongoing in rotation. It'll be back again, a major golf tournament here. So to me, that's the biggest story to have something of this magnitude.
Tim Zocchi, really do appreciate you being
here.
Thank
you, buddy.
He was never voted most likely to succeed.
You're such a loser.
But then again, were you?
The very concept is unimaginable.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
Here at the PGA Championship, Quail Hollow in Charlotte, where we have a very important question to ask. What's in the box?
What's in the box?
Bill Belichick, the latest coach to send a box to John Gruden's house, where he opens it up.
Shout out to Bill Belichick.
It's just content galore. This is a good opportunity to watch us on YouTube, Twitch, or X, but the sound is just as good. WD, how many of these clips do we have?
I have three clips.
Let's hit the first one.
Bill Belichick, can you imagine how exciting that is? The greatest coach of all time coaching at North Carolina. I never did understand Belichick's defense. I can't understand how they taped up this box either. This is an exciting time for North Carolina football. Coach Belichick coming in, legendary status. A lot of great players at North Carolina. Try Lawrence Taylor. I'm going to show you his jersey in a minute. Perhaps the greatest defensive football player ever. I wouldn't even use that word, perhaps. Another great Tar Heel that gave me fits, Julius freaking Peppers. We used to blast them with tight ends, running backs. We used to double team them. Nothing mattered.
Fun fact, Julius's middle name actually is freaking. Julius freaking Peppers. Will Dalton.
Let me guess, that was sarcasm. I don't like you sometimes.
You're very sharp. I'll tell you what, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Will Dalton thought Julius Peppers' name was actually freaking Peppers, man.
You said it with such conviction.
It's a fun fact.
Yep. Yep.
Let's get another piece of this John Gruden, Bill Belichick, Carolina football box masterpiece.
God, it makes me feel like I'm playing in a four-corner offense for Dean Smith. Hey, Worthy! James Worthy! Sam Perkins! Remember that guy shooting? I mean, yeah, that guy was phenomenal.
I remember.
Phil Ford! The Tar Heels, man. Whew. You like these? Sweet, isn't it?
Got some shoes, man.
When do we get past the point where the primary way you reference Carolina basketball is with the four corners offense? We're not there yet, because it still comes up on broadcast and all the time. People bring it up. When does that finally age out where people say Carolina, four corners, Dean Smith? 20 years? 15?
Maybe. I mean, there needs to be something to replace it with.
Phil Ford. You remember Sam Perkins?
We're getting.
That was really good.
Yeah.
All right. One more.
And that Hampton kid that the Chargers just took, first rounder out of North Carolina, he can play the game. This is very nice right here.
This is awesome.
Very nice right here. You like it?
Yeah.
How about Drake May? Matt Trubisky.
What's the. Oh, it's the lid.
Hey. Look at. I got some sweat. I'm surprised Coach Belichick didn't write a note like, "Hey Gruden, we used to kick your ass every time we played. Don't come to the ACC or we'll kick your ass again." This is a very nice wristband right here. I love it.
Did he just call it, was it Mike or Matt Trubisky?
Matt Trubisky.
See, Mike would be somewhat understandable because at least you got the first two letters right.
Not even close.
Matt Trubisky.
Matt Trubisky, baby.
Incredible. Remember when that was a story, Mitch or Mitchell? His mom wanted him to be called Mitchell.
Yeah.
He went by Mitch. Apparently, we all decided, nope, he's Mitch. We're going to call him Mitch Trubisky.
Well, the same thing happened with Teteroa McMillan.
I was about to ask, are we... His mom doesn't want him to be called Tet. Does that mean we stop calling him Tet?
I mean, I'm cool with T-Mac. That rolls off the tongue nicely.
Yeah, but T-Mac sounds like you're referring to a 12-year-old.
I mean, listen, I don't hate it.
Yeah, we got T-Mac who's drinking some Fanta. Oh,
listen,
T-Mac has some high C. T-Mac.
I think you're sleeping on it a little bit.
That's like calling Christian McCaffrey C-Mac.
I don't hate that either.
No, we called him CMC or Christian or...
CMC's better. But C-Mac getting bad either.
T-Mac. Just not a huge fan of T-Mac. Or the draft pick, frankly. But, I guess we'll talk more Panthers now.
Per Joe Person. So, remember how I told you week two would be the home opener against an NFC South team? We've got the team. September 21st, Atlanta Falcons.
Of course. You got to play Atlanta either week one or week two.
Yep. And apparently, Joe Person went on to say there's going to be like three Buccaneers games like sandwiched in towards the end of the season or something.
Well.
Or something like that.
You only play the Bucs twice, so probably not. Going to be playing Tampa three times.
Twice in the last 3 weeks is what I meant to say. I thought that sounded a little
odd. That makes a little bit more sense.
I thought it sounded a little odd.
A lot more sense.
Yep.
That makes. Okay, let me get to some observations, us being on the course today. Would you like that? Would you like that, Will?
I'd love it.
Since we're here, we might as well tell you some of the things that are happening. The course is pretty darn wet. It is going to impact play tomorrow. So you're going to watch Scott Van Pelt or whomever, and you're going to watch coverage, some of the featured holes. West Durham, as we referenced with Mark Schlabaugh's here, he's going to be calling some a featured group. I think the Oberg group he's going to be calling. And especially those who are teeing off in the morning tomorrow are going to have to deal with it. They're going to have to deal with a lot of mud balls, and that's something that isn't going to get right for a little bit. There are celebrities out here, Will. Do you have this tweet from earlier?
What tweet is this?
That I sent out. Some of the news that I broke.
Oh, let me find this.
About who is in attendance here in Charlotte. Not talking about Scott Van Pelt. We know Scott Van Pelt is here. That's pretty cool. Ran into Scotty. Had a chance to catch up with Stanford Steve. Stanford Steve is going to be part of a betting simulcast, which is fun, on ESPN2 tomorrow. He did give me a long shot that we will ride in our best bet segment in just a little bit.
This is pretty cool here.
Larry O'Brien. A celebrity on the course. Just walking around here, well, being carried around here. If you don't know who Larry O'Brien is, Larry O'Brien is the NBA championship trophy. Insert all your Charlotte Hornet jokes here. That this might be the first time ever that Larry O'Brien has been in the Queen City.
And last.
It might be the last time. Maybe Larry O'Brien got a memo that he was going to go wherever Cooper Flagg was supposed to go. And instead going to be rerouted to Dallas.
Bingo!
I don't know. Larry O'Brien in the house here. And then visited the merch shop, Will. We got a bag of things here.
Did you?
Got a bag.
What you got?
Where's the shirt at? Oh, got a couple hats, got a shirt. There's a game that you play, Will. Mm-hmm. I was unfamiliar with this game until walking into the merch shop earlier today. Would you like to know what the game is called?
I love games. Let's do this.
The game's called Can You Leave Without Spending $200?
I bet it's tough.
I did not achieve this mission today.
No, you didn't?
I didn't win that game today.
Oh, man.
Because there's so many options.
I get
so
it.
So many things.
And you're there. You want to live it up and, you know, get souvenirs and stuff. I get it. Trust me.
So, yeah. I can only imagine what it looks like at Augusta. Or, heck, what it looks like on a non-practice day going into the merch shop. But I failed at that game today. The can you leave the merch store without spending $200. The drive is brought to you by our friends, Yes Will, Glorified Body Well Spa. They've helped us get here at the PGA Championship. Between work, family, endless to-do lists, it's easy to forget to take care of yourself, Will. Glorified Body Well Spa. The premier wellness destination offers curated holistic therapies for rejuvenation and recovery, including float, cryo, compression therapy, infrared sauna sessions. They got it. Discover the ultimate escape at Glorified Body Well Spa, opening soon in Clemens. Ask them about pre-opening specials. We got 5 bets to hand out. Best bets for the 2025 PGA Championship here at Quail Hollow Golf Club, and we hand out those picks next on The Drive.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
Just race to grab a drink. Will, if your options are Pepsi, Sprite, or I guess starry, Gatorade or water, what are you picking?
On a daily basis, I'm going water because I'm a healthy guy. But if it's a special occasion, I might grab me a Pepsi, dadgummit.
For those watching on YouTube, Twitch, and X, you don't have to wonder what I picked. Got the blue Gatorade.
A little Riptide Rush.
Riptide Rush.
That's the flavor name. At least that's what
it
looks
like. No, it isn't.
Riptide Rush. That's what it looks like there.
What is Riptide Rush?
It's a blue Gatorade flavor. Read this it. What does it say?
This says Cool Blue, Will.
Oh, okay.
I also hear of other blue flavors that have iceberg in it or something. I've never heard Riptide Rush.
Somebody get in the comments and tell me you know what Riptide Rush is. Now, there's Glacier Freeze, too. I know what Cool Blue is. That's a good option. But Riptide Rush, I'm telling you.
You're going to have to pull this up video-wise.
Okay, I will.
I want to see Riptide Rush. Because I'm a known drinker of Gatorade.
Yeah.
When I played soccer, I exclusively trafficked in the blue Gatorade.
Would you look a here? Let me
different
let me...
types of blue Gatorade, and I am unaware of Riptide Rush.
See? Right there, buddy. Riptide.
What color is that, Will?
It's blue.
That is purple.
Purple.
Am I blind? Or are you colorblind?
I'm a little colorblind.
That is. Can you make it as big as possible?
Yeah, let me see what
Riptide
I can do.
Riptide Rush. I have a blue Gatorade right here. And then you chime in uselessly with, is it Riptide Rush? I'm thinking, there is no blue flavor that's Riptide Rush. And now, as we can see, hopefully bigger than what we have.
Yeah, that's as big as I can get it.
That is purple.
Yeah, it is purple. I'm a little colorblind when it comes to these things sometimes.
That's one way to put it.
Our phone now, lines are lighting up, by the way.
Take them! 336-777-1600. I've never been more passionate about a topic than I am right now. Some would think Josh is most passionate about Cooper Flagg and the draft lottery or conviction on Rory McIlroy or Scottie Scheffler here at the PGA Championship or the NFL schedule or Bill Belichick or any of that. No, I'm passionate about Blue Gatorade and Cool Blue. Who am I going to on the line here?
Doug and Winston.
Doug, are you with me? Is this a...
No.
Turn down your radio.
First,
hold one sec. Turn
if
down
you drink
your,
any Gatorade
hold
at
one
all.
Sec. Turn, hold one sec. Calm down. Turn down your radio very quickly and then tell me about Riptide Rush.
Of Riptide Rush.
Go ahead. What do you have on Riptide Rush?
Hello?
Yeah, we have you. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Oh, I think Will, he can't hear me, but he can hear you.
Hello?
So this is the part where you put him on mute, and then you either play translator or we do something else.
Can he hear us now?
Will, Doug? Hey, can you hear me now, Doug?
Yeah, I got you, man.
Okay. Now, so you got the radio down. Tell us what we need to know about Riptide Rush.
I mean, if you drink any kind of sports drink, especially Gatorade, because, you know, there's Powerade, Gatorade, all that stuff, everybody knows about Riptide Rush. Riptide Rush has been around a long time.
But it's not blue. It's not blue, Doug. This is not an indictment on Riptide Rush. It's an indictment on the suggestion that Riptide Rush should be confused with Glacier Ice or with Cool Blue.
Not to see, yeah, it's three different colors, three different flavors. What color would you like Riptide Rush to be?
See, I'm fine with it being purple. I'm saying Will Dalton looked at my blue Gatorade that I'm eating right or drinking right now and said, ooh, Riptide Rush. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Well,
Riptide Rush is not blue. This is the only problem I have. You and I are aligned, Doug. Riptide Rush is fine. I went to East Carolina. They are purple. It's in the chant. Like, I'm not against Riptide Rush. I've had plenty Riptide Rush. But I'm just saying.
Would you like one more
caller? Don't
confuse
it with blue. Yes, I do. What do we have, Will?
We got Matt in Puffoff Town.
Matt in Puffoff Town. We know it's pronounced.
Come on,
Pop-town.
Man.
We know hey, it's Pop Town.
We know. See, we know. I've been here. I've been around. I can make these jokes. I don't call it King. We call it what, Will?
Kang.
Kang. We do it the way it's supposed to be done here. What do you have, Matt?
Come on, man. Riptide Rush is the bomb. You got to check it out.
Hold 1 second. Hold 1 second, everybody.
You're getting piled on right now, and I love it.
I said I never heard of Riptide Rush. Okay, I've heard of the purple Gatorade.
Yeah, this is not that.
Okay. It is
great.
That.
No, it's not. That's great.
A little different. It's not
what?
Great.
It might
get,
be a,
get Matt out of here, Pop Town.
It might be a shade of purple, like a light purple, but it
What's
is not.
What's the other flavor of purple? Can you look
grape.
This up? I don't think there is a grape Gatorade,
oh,
Will.
Oh, good grief. This is a very educational program.
It really is.
I can't
as you're
you.
Looking this up, can I hand out bets real quick? Because Steve Reed's going to come over here in a few minutes, and I'm still going to not have handed out any bets.
I'm not a betting duck.
Care to make it interesting?
You know you do.
You're on. Count me in on this.
Your best bet.
But my money's on the other team.
This is Josh's Best Bets.
Man, the most random of topics hit on this show.
They do.
I swear. Okay. We have 5 bets, Will. 5 that we're handing out for the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow. Are you ready to take notes?
Let's do it.
Let's start with just to win the tournament. Scottie Scheffler, 4-1. There's not great value there, but that's who we have winning the tournament. So that's where we start. We're going to have at least one bet down on that.
Send me that cash out, fam.
The best value to win the tournament. Among the players that can win this tournament, best value is Justin Thomas at 22-1. In terms of guys who are playing the best golf, this guy's won 3 of his last 4 majors. Or not 3 of his last 4 majors. 3 of his last 4 starts. And the last time there was a major here at Quail Hollow, it was the PGA in 2017. And who won it? Yes, Justin Thomas. So he's a hot hand, and 22-1's good value.
Send me that cash out, fam.
Next up, top 10 finish, our guy, Will. Ludvig Åberg, plus 210, so a little bit better than 2-1 odds to finish in the top 10. His time's coming soon. He has his game's so smooth. Cleanest swing on tour, best swing on tour. His time's coming. He could win this week. So top 10 is what we're looking at for Ludvig Åberg at plus 210.
Send me that cash out, fam.
And WD, just because Stanford Steve told me I had to do this, who's going to be doing the ESPN bet, ESPN2 simulcast tomorrow of the PGA Championship. He told me Andrew Nowak plus 320 odds as a long shot to finish in the top 20. Top 20, plus 320, Andrew Nowak. So better than 3-1 to finish in the top 20. Who's Andrew Nowak, you might ask? Well, he's from Wofford. Grew up in Raleigh. So a North Carolina kid, and he won a PGA Tour event in New Orleans 3 weeks ago. So he has a hot hand. He's somebody that knows the course pretty well, and he is somebody that, I think that pretty much covers it.
Send me
he
that
knows
cash
the course
up,
pretty
man.
Well, and he's playing pretty well. And the last one I'll give out, WD, we have to do it just because we do it every major now. Corey Connors.
Send me that cash out, fam.
65-1.
Inevitable.
To win it, yes. There's our long shot to win. As we welcome in our next guest to the show, Steve Reed, there's a lot going on. We're here at the PGA Championship. The NFL schedule's dropping. Bill Belichick is in the news and ACC spring meetings down in Amelia Island. We have the All-Star race down in North Wilkesboro this weekend. There's the draft lottery just happened. So you might be surprised to learn that the thing that most people are commenting on in the chat and are calling WD to discuss are the best Gatorade flavors.
Really?
And it's because I just started the segment saying, hey, Will, you go to a fridge, you see Pepsi, you see Gatorade, you see Starry, you see water, what are you picking? And I said, I picked the Gatorade, and I got just a cool blue Gatorade here. And WD chimed in and said, oh, Riptide Rush? I said, what? Riptide Rush? And apparently, that just set off the floodgate. Where
it's a real thing.
Riptide Rush on the internet and via the phone lines. We've just taken two phone calls from people saying that Riptide Rush is the real deal.
What is grape?
See, that is Riptide Rush.
Is that Riptide Rush?
No,
that's my
it
favorite.
Isn't. No.
You could not have segued any better without knowing what the conversation just was. WT already has it pulled up. Because I said, there is no grape. It's just Riptide Rush.
Yes.
There's grape.
There's a difference
right there.
Here.
That's what I'm taking.
Yep. Also, I should know that there's a grape flavor because there was like a run of three or four straight years where the Gatorade cover color was pure purple for the Super Bowl. The coach getting doused.
Right.
So,
yep, absolutely.
But that's not why you're here.
But it could be.
It could be the reason you're here. Gatorade enthusiast Steve Reed from the Associated Press is here. The last couple days, you've heard what Scotty had to say, Bryson,
yep.
Rory, many others. What have you found to be most interesting the last couple of days?
Well, I think, you know, coming into this, to me, and it hasn't changed, I think this is Rory's tournament to lose. I mean, he's been fantastic here, right? He's won four times at the Wells Fargo Championship, which is now, what, the Truist Championship, which will be something else in a few years. But it seems like it never ends.
Yeah, it always
the name
does.
Change. But, no, I think this course fits him so well because – This is a course. It's for bombers. It's a bomber's delight, as Bryson said. You know, it's whoever can hit the ball long is going to be at a huge advantage. So it plays to Rory's strengths, the way he can hit some fades around some trees, and he's just got immense confidence here. I mean, he feels like he can hit any shot. And if you were here for the Wells Fargo last year on Sunday, I mean, it was unbelievable the way he played. I mean, the finish. So it was, you know, he feels so confident here. I feel like it's his tournament to lose. But there is some good, you know, listen, Scottie Scheffler's coming off a remarkable 31 under. Holy, I mean, that's like Golden Tee golf, right? I mean, he was unbelievable. And, you know, Bryson can hit the ball a long way, and he's going to be a factor as well. You never know. I mean, I heard you say, before I came on the segment, some long shots. Well, you know, I was a little surprised to see Justin Rose was 100-1. I mean, he's finished second the last two majors, right? The British Open and the Masters. You know, he's a long shot candidate. You know, and there's other guys, you know, Xander Schauffele and, you know, and Justin Thomas is playing some of his best golf as well and finally got that monkey off his back.
Who do you think you have a pulse of North Carolina sports fans about as well as anybody out there? Last year being at Pinehurst, you just sensed that in that final round, most of the people were rooting for Bryson.
Yeah.
And Bryson won over Rory. But you know this city specifically better than most. With Rory having won at this course four times, if the same scenario played out Sunday, who are more people rooting for, Bryson or Rory?
I think Rory. I think just because of the history here and people just, you know, have seen him and are so used to him. Now, Bryson, I think he's only played here once in the last 6 years because he's been on the LIV and a couple of years, like he played like 4 years ago and then he hadn't played 2 years before that. So he has not played here a lot. So it'll be kind of interesting to see his reception and what it is. But I just think there is a strong Rory fan base here in Charlotte. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people that want to see him come in and win this thing. I you know, and possibly go on to, you know, who knows, maybe win the Grand Slam and, you know, the same year. People want to see history all the time, right? You know, could he do it in the same year? Who knows? We'll see. But what was it? I think I saw it was like really the odds weren't long to that. It was like 81 or
crazy
100-1. It's like really not that long considering. I mean, that's a really incredible thing that, you know, would have to accomplish. But no, I think the fans here in Charlotte, now granted, this you're going to have a wider fan base too. I mean, you're going to have more than just Charlotte people. This is people around the world that are going to be here. But you know, I think Rory's going to be a strong favorite.
With that in mind, this being a major and it being in Charlotte, we know about the history at Pinehurst that goes back to the moment of Payne Stewart in 99.
Yeah.
What
I was there.
Yeah. What do you make about this event? What does it mean to Charlotte? And what identity do you see, since the future of this course, President's Cup and, you know, maybe another PGA not too long, what identity does this course have nationally?
Well, I think it's strong. You know, I've heard some recent complaints in the last couple of days. You know, Hunter Mann, one of the former golfers, was criticizing it. But I think it's a terrific course. I think it's a good test of golf. Three strong closing holes, and it's something Charlotte needs. I mean, it's a, you know, a course that is up there with many of the courses that are ranked high in the nation. And I think it's going to continue to be a site for the PGA Championship. You're going to continue to see, you know, the President's Cup, things like that. Will they ever get a Ryder Cup here? Probably. That'd be tough. But you know, I don't know. But it's going to be definitely on the PGA Championship schedule, I think, for a while. And it draws well, too. That's the other thing is, you know, the sales here have been good for, you know, merchandise. It is, you know, it's going to be a sellout, and, you know, they're going to pack the place. So, you know, it's a strong thing for Charlotte to have, and, you know, they've done a great job here, I think, ever since, you know, redoing this course and bringing it up to a level of being a top national course.
Last thing, getting to the Panthers. What does it tell you? We now know that the Panthers have at least one primetime game. They're going to play the 49ers in November on the road on Monday Night Football. What does it tell you that the Panthers are not going to be shut out in primetime games this
year? Well, that's a change, right? I mean,
it feels like it's
been a while. I mean, but, you know, it's this is a team that's still very young, still has a lot to learn, still has a lot to grow. But, you know, I like their first-round pick. I know a lot of people in Charlotte did not. It was widely critical. You were probably among you. I like this kid. I've watched him on film. I think he can make plays. I think he's going to be a difference maker. I think he's going to end up starting, if not to the season opener, then a few weeks in he will be the starter. I like that he brings big playability. He's got a good catch radius. I think he's going to be – I think people are going to be surprised – at how productive he is. And I think he's got a good chance to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. We'll see.
I think
I could be wrong, right. But I have a strong feeling about this one. I haven't had a strong feeling about a lot of their picks over the years, but I think he's going to be a player. I really do, Josh.
I don't even think it's an indictment on him as a player. I think it's more what are you setting out to do? And where you started your answer saying, like, hey – this is a very young team still. That's what I heard when Dave Canales was talking about the rationale of cutting Jadeveon Clowney. Hey, we want to get some of the young guys in there. And that doesn't sound like a team that's ready to win the way that some fans are talking about yet. And I think there's a disconnect between the way that some media that aren't here day to day are talking about the Panthers because of their finish and fans and maybe how the staff and the GM views it.
Yep. I think, you know, also there is a faction of people that just want them to add some pass rushers and some defensive linemen, right?
That's where that's the camp I felt if you were trying to contend now.
I get, And, you know, but they did a little bit of work in free agency, so they answered some of those needs. Did they answer all of them? No, but you're going into, you know, You picture a dam and you're trying to, you know, plug all the holes in the dam, you know, and you only got so many fingers and toes and so many draft picks to do it, right? And so I think you take the guy and, you know, it's coach, GMs always say, you know, hey, best player available. I think he was the best player available on that board at that point. I think he really was. So you take him and then you build around that. And I think you give Bryce Young another weapon. And I think there is a strong sense from ownership that they want to do everything they possibly can to make sure that Bryce Young pick was a good pick and not a failed pick, because halfway through the season last year, none of us were really thinking that way, right?
No.
I mean, you know, he was benched. I mean, this wasn't that long ago. You know, he was benched for Andy Dalton, a journeyman backup quarterback, and, well, who had been a starter, but, you know, at the time had been journeyman backup quarterback. And so there was a lot of, you know, people, including me, who wondered if guaranteed they were going to pick a quarterback in this draft, right? Because there was a lot of questions about Bryce Young. And then all of a sudden the turnaround started to come, and you started to see him mature and grow and, and really stunned a lot of people, including myself, playing extremely well down the stretch.
Steve Reed, thank you for being here. It's good to have you on the show, Associated Press, and we'll follow your work in the AP.
Anytime.
You're on the Drive with Josh Graham.
Michael Eaves joining us, ESPN SportsCenter anchor. When you're anchoring SportsCenter, I imagine that story prioritization is a very important skill, understanding what the top story is, and that's where things begin. So when you're looking at the 107th PGA Championship here at Quail Hollow in Charlotte, what's the first storyline you point to?
Rory McIlroy. And it's not even a question. And I made this comment earlier on our coverage over on ESPN Plus that, you know, I don't root for teams or individuals. I don't. Other than my alma mater, Kentucky, I don't root for teams. But as a fan and also as a journalist, I do love a great story. And the best story coming in here is Rory McIlroy because of what he did last month at Augusta National. Now, if he were to win here, to win two straight majors and halfway to a calendar Grand Slam, just think of the momentum we would be taking into Oakmont after the U.S. Open. So he is by far the best possible story that could develop by the time we get to Sunday evening.
And it's so interesting. Mark Schlabach, excuse me, is going to be with us in a little bit. We were talking about this after Rory spoke today. There are two ways you can view the Masters win last month. You can view it as the relief and the weight off your shoulders, and now he's just going to soar and just continue to win tournaments. Or after listening to him today, he kind of had this vibe of, all right, I did what I set out to do. I achieved what I set out to do. This is the greatest thing I've done in my life. And that's not what sounds like a hungry dog ready to go this week and to get another championship. Where do you side on that?
I think he's more on the first narrative that you laid out there. Now, the one of the best things about Rory McIlroy as a professional athlete, he has oftentimes given us insight that is very honest that other athletes would not freely admit publicly the way he has, right? And so when they do that, then you're like, oh, wait, is that doubt as opposed to awareness? For him, I just think it's awareness.
We saw that after Augusta.
Correct, right? So he absolutely accomplished the one thing he wanted to accomplish most in his career, right? So in his mind, everything else here is gravy, right? But maybe he really likes gravy, right? So now he's going to go out there and be even more inspired to keep winning and add to that legacy to become one of the all-time greats, maybe one of the top four players of all time. I do think that drive is still there, but I do think it was relief. We saw that on the green. He bawled his eyes out, and then there were literal tears of joy. So he did both of those things, and I think he's going to be free and go out here and play really well.
It's such a good point that you bring up, Michael, because the last time we saw Rory up close was at Pinehurst last year.
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch what happened on the back nine, you're thinking, well, this might be the low point of his career. And then we're waiting in the media center, and then we hear the screams.
Right.
But for anyone who knows Rory, very unlike
him. That is not him at all.
But that just goes to tell you, this is a guy, whether it's positive emotion or negative emotion, wears it on his shoulders.
He was devastated. Right? And he was feeling that devastation in front of the entire world. I'm not sure if you remember the movie Friday or some of your listeners do. The classic scene when the chain got snatched and it was grandmama's chain. He ran to the car. And what did Smokey say?
You got to run with your arms.
He going to cry when he gets to the car. Rory McIlroy cried when he got to that car. I believe that 1,000%. And you can understand why. I mean, that was utter devastation because he didn't think he got beat. He thought he gave it away. And that's a different sense of loss. But look how well he's played since then. Three wins already. No one's on tour one more than that.
We'll see if someone can Debo the trophy from Rory McIlroy today.
Maybe it'd be Bryson again.
What have we learned? What have you learned about this golf course upon arriving, upon being here, doing SportsCenter, talking to folks? What have you learned about Quail Hollow?
Fortunately for me, I was able to play the golf course last October, so I got a pretty good sense of, you know, a lot of things the players say you can't feel until you've done it yourself. It's a big boy golf course. There's no question about that. The longest layout ever for a par 71 in PGA Championship history, and it suits bombers, obviously. So you're going to see a lot of drivers, and guys are going to try to figure it out from there, and that includes Rory McIlroy, and that's why he's won here four times. It suits his game. But the thing that's really been impressive to me is how firm the greens have still been in the wake of all this rain. Now, granted, they got the sub-air systems under the green to suck out the moisture, but the greens are also relatively new in terms of how long they've been in. And so it's going to be a challenge, hitting from wet surfaces to hard greens. So I want to see, especially Thursday morning and Thursday afternoon, how the players adapt to those conditions.
Around here, when the week started, we just thought to ourselves, this week's insane. It's the PGA Championship right down the road. It's the NASCAR All-Star Race at North Wilkesboro. The NFL schedule release is happening in real time, even though everything will officially drop tonight. We had the draft lottery earlier this week. The Canes playing the Washington Capitals. Around here, the story was who didn't get the pick. Charlotte had tied for the best odds, and Cooper Flagg, of course, goes to Dallas. Nationally, it seems the team that got the pick is the primary story. What do you think about Cooper Flagg with Dallas now that that is a reality, removing the controversy?
I think Cooper Flagg has been an absolute stud in the NBA. And I felt that since the first time I saw him play in high school. I thought when he came out of the high school his senior year, he could have been the number one pick in that in last year's draft, right? He's that good of a talent. And for Dallas to come out of this whole Luka debacle to get him to replace an all-time great there in Dallas, to pair with Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving, like if you tell me that the Dallas Mavericks are in the Western Conference Finals next year, right now, that would not be an insane prediction. It really wouldn't be. Now, granted, he's going to be a rookie. He's got to learn things of that nature. But to go into a situation where he doesn't have to be the man right off the jump like Kate Cunningham did and some other players of recent note, or Zion Williamson obviously going to New Orleans, he doesn't have that same pressure because he's got two All-Stars and two future Hall of Famers on his side, right? So I think that's only going to speed his development. But I think that dude's going to be an absolute stud.
Yeah, it also strikes a balance where he isn't having to be the savior, to put it one way. But also, he is the guy that they're likely going to build around, which wouldn't have been the case if he went to San Antonio, for example. So it does, in that case, for Cooper, seem to be a good destination. Getting to another NBA note. So we got Pacers already through to the Eastern Conference Finals, second straight years. The Knicks and the Celtics, it's game five tonight. Let's assume that the team up 3-1 doesn't blow a lead, especially when Jason Tatum is injured for the next little while, long while. Who do you give an early edge between the Pacers and Knicks? These are teams that met each other in the playoffs a year ago. I know your brain probably immediately goes where many of us go, Reggie Miller and Spike Lee in the 90s.
There's so much history there, but that history is so long ago, these players weren't born, right? Which is kind of insane when you really think about it. But the question you posed was not a question I ever thought I'd have to consider. Who in the hell had the Pacers and the Knicks potentially in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Cleveland and Boston were 10 games or better than the rest of the East.
No one thought this would be the matchup we would get. So with that being said, I don't really know. Look, the Knicks, I think Jalen Brunson is he's perfect for that team in that city. But you've got Karl Anthony Towns, who's so dynamic at his size to be able to do things both inside and outside. And then you have the role players who fit perfectly with that squad, whether it's OG Anunoby or Mikal Bridges. Like, they just have the pieces to complement what they have. But you look at the Pacers, well, bro, they're really good too, right? I mean, Tyrese Halliburton is a solid player, and everything feeds off of him.
They won the series last year.
Correct, and they're complementary players. Also support what they have collectively. And, oh, by the way, their head coach is really damn good. He's a phenomenal coach. He's already won a championship. Rick Carlisle can outcoach anybody. And to see him and Tom Thibodeau go head-to-head is going to be very interesting. Let me say this. I'm going to give the edge to the Pacers because Knicks fans get on my nerves.
Yeah.
They just do, man.
What's crazy is going to your point about us not expecting this could ever happen this series. While you were talking, I was like going back and forth. Who has home court again if those two teams play? Because you just never thought like the Knicks do. So the Knicks would have a home court in that hypothetical. Michael Eaves is with us from ESPN. Last thing, in the spirit of storylines and figuring out what the top storyline is, Bill Belichick, spring meetings, ACC spring meetings. That's one thing I forgot to mention and things that are happening this week. How high up on the list is Bill Belichick in Chapel Hill in terms of college football storylines? Like, it's a college football Saturday, and you're having to pick, okay, what's in the A block here? Do you think that Chapel Bill is going to be in the A block more times or not?
Yes. All right, let's take out the personal life for just one second.
Yes.
The greatest NFL coach of all time going to college was a huge story to begin with. Like, Bill teaching college kids and having to deal with recruiting, things of that nature, like that's a story within itself just for the football nerds out there. So that would have been, like, his first game that would have been an A block by the time we get to September regardless.
And
right?
It will be when you talk about 8 o'clock Monday night Labor Day, TCU at Carolina.
100%, right? But now you add in the intrigue of his personal life, that having him on TMZ and being discussed on the Today Show and Good Morning America, that's a whole different thing. But it just adds to it, right? I mean, when have we ever asked Bill Belichick about his personal life? Right, and he's been having to answer it so much in the last several weeks, and to just add to the entry.
Yeah, and also, I mean, he's been a company man for Disney and ESPN. I'll tell you what, been on McAfee. His first interview was with Marty Smith. Mm-hmm. He was on yesterday with SportsCenter. He's going to be on GMA this week.
Yep.
Like, he sat down with Carolina's radio guy one time. Really, the only time it didn't go well was when he didn't do an ESPN interview.
Right, he was with CBS. That's what he gets. Got to keep in the family,
that's,
Bill.
That's what I'm saying.
Come over here to Disney. We got you.
Michael Eaves, when will we next see you on television?
Tomorrow. We have, obviously, our coverage begins 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. I'm doing interviews plus SportsCenter coverage and then wrapping up the end of the day for SportsCenter at night. So, all day tomorrow.
Thank you so much for being
here.
No
problem, man.
Michael Eaves of ESPN joining us here. We really do appreciate that.